I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And as always, I am very happy to be here with you. One of the things we're seeing out going on in the world right now is the continuing violence and destruction by large groups of people of all different races who are attacking, apparently, America. Now, this has stemmed initially from the legitimate protest over the death of George Floyd. We all pretty much are in agreement with that. What happened to Mr. Floyd, regardless of his previous life, doesn't matter. What happened to him that day was inappropriate, should not have happened to anyone. And that will be dealt with through the court system. We see the courts actually taking action on it. The pursuing of continued violence now is with other groups, not necessarily the protesters, who, like I said, had legitimate right to protest. I was protesting what I saw happen to Mr. Floyd. But now we're seeing Antifa taking this opportunity to attack America, to think they're going to make their move, which, you know, there's some violent people in there. But when you see pictures of them, they're mostly teenage kids dressed in black playing Army Man, kind of what it looks like. Other than they're violent and they're not being stopped. See, that's the problem. With all of this rioting that we see and all these attacks on police everywhere, when we see the police backing down and stepping away, what that encourages is more violence. So if people see they can throw bottles at a police car and smash the windows of a police car with an officer inside the car, and no one does anything, they simply back away, drive away, then that encourages people to do more of that. That kind of action against the police, which is the initial target, now is expanding out to other parts of our society. The reason that that's happening is that is a natural flow of energy with these kind of revolutions that are taking place. Now, this one is not a major revolution, other than at this time it is spreading to a lot of our cities. It is not a completely organized type of activity. Like the groups that are doing it are not connected necessarily to each other, state to state, and they're all having a push. Hey, tonight we attack police cars. Tomorrow we attack financial institutions, whatever it is, as a regular traditional revolution might be led by one particular group, and they give marching orders to everyone. This is kind of a freelance. This is our chance to go out and destroy things and make our points heard. The problem with that is that when we see, especially in these Democratic-controlled states, where we see they're taking the option to say, you know what, let people blow off steam, let them go out and do what they're going to do, and hopefully that's going to weaken the whole process, and then people will calm down, and then we can see where we are, right? That's one option that people have, and it seems that our blue state friends are doing exactly that. They're letting people vent, they're letting people take over parts of their city, they're letting people attack their police officers without much of a response. Now, we did see in Washington, when they attempted to set up an unoccupied zone, no police zone, near the White House, that the Virginia police finally stormed in there and took aggressive action, and pushed everyone away. Now, I'm the first one to say my concerns about government reacting with force against its citizens is something to be very, very concerned about, always and anywhere. But we have to look at, you know, the concept of law and order has always been one that's been part and parcel of who we are as the American people. We have a law and order society. We live by the rule of law. We take our problems to a court for adjudication. We don't fight in the streets. We don't duel anymore, you know, like we did back in the day. We don't duel when you have a problem with someone. You know, if you can't work it out locally, you go to court. Well, I understand that a lot of the people involved in the mayhem that's going on out in the world, they are not, I'm trying to think of the right way I want to say this, they are not anti-American to the bone. They are anti-American systems, or at least what they believe to be the systems of unfairness in America. And I think they honestly believe that we have to do away with all these systems and start over again. Now, this is naivete. This is not understanding how things work. If you remove all the safety barriers from a society, expecting that, well, you know what? All we're going to do is we're going to rebuild those barriers better. Once you take the barriers down, there will be a flood of chaos and confusion and destruction, and it'll be very, very difficult, if not impossible, to rebuild those barrier walls and to put the society back together. You will have a society. It will eventually wring itself out, but it will be nothing like what we have. Now, for some people, that's what they say is the best thing. We don't want what we have. We want to undo what we have. And this is where I'm saying there's naivete. And that's dangerous to all of us, because while we may have flaws and we still have things we have to correct, obviously, the concerns that have come up after George Floyd are things, now is the time to let's work this out. Let's figure this out. But we have to have a clear and concise conversation about this, with everybody's laundry being brought out, and clear up everyone's concerns. Not just one side's concern. Everyone has concerns here, and they have to all be addressed. So how can we possibly do that? I mean, it's so difficult. Coming from law enforcement, I know what it's really like in law enforcement agencies. Are there some bad apples? Of course there are. Are they the majority? No, they're not. They're good men and women who are out there trying to protect and serve their community. People of all races, religions, and creeds are trying to protect their communities. When one of the bad apples pops up, everyone looks at it and points fingers and says, see, the cops are like that. And one of those reasons is the average citizen doesn't like to be policed, right? Do you like to be policed? Do you like to be pulled over and given a ticket, right? People find that to be offensive, especially if they consider themselves, hey, I'm a good person. You know, why are you giving me a ticket that's going to cost me $300? These are some of the things that we need to unwind and look at. The purpose of policing. In a lot of areas, policing has become a revenue generator. I don't think anyone can argue that point. You know, writing traffic tickets, the purpose of a traffic ticket is when you see someone blatantly committing a violation that endangers everyone around them on the road, then a police officer is to stop that car, address that dangerous driving behavior with the driver, and then issue them a summons that they have to go to court. Now they can pay a fine, which is their penalty for their bad driving. The purpose being that that penalty, boy, that's a lot of money I had to spend for driving like an idiot, blowing through red lights. Maybe I'll just slow down. That's the purpose. It's to get you to conduct yourself in a particular way, to control a behavior. Now, when it comes to driving a car on a highway, that could be very dangerous. If you drive inappropriately, you could kill someone. So therefore, there's a penalty attached to your poor driving so that you will change your way. But when tickets are just blatantly handed out by officers, because, you know, we all talked for a long time there in the 90s, there was a big conversation about quotas. Do quotas exist? And there were some agencies that were shown to have quotas. You know, every officer has to write X amount of tickets. And that becomes onerous to people. Now, if you are in the lower income scale, as I was at one point in my life, I was just a working guy doing what I could to survive. If you got yourself a $175 ticket, that could blow up any budget you have for living. And if you add a wife, a couple of kids, a car payment, and then $175 on top of it, it's almost impossible to function. And I think that is part of the reason that people are jumping on this anti-police thing. Now, I think they also believe a lot of the rhetoric that cops are racist and they're out chasing people down to kill them just because of their race. I think people believe that because our media pushes that. That's the reason that they don't tell you other things. That's why the media doesn't show you other kinds of things going on out there to show, wow, that's bad too. Maybe we should address that. They just want this one-sided thing to come out because it's the building stone, it's the building block for attacking other parts of American life. You go after the police, the one thing that holds it all together. Without the police and law enforcement, you could pretty much do whatever you want because who's going to stop you? You see, so this is an important part to a group that wants to rattle the American system and not just reform it, but remove it and replace it with something else. That is the point where we think we're at, or at least it feels like we are. So recently, I wrote an article called A Case for War, and it's up on the AmericaOutloud.com platform. You can go find it there. It's been well received, and I'm very happy that it is. But more important than that is I was trying to voice these feelings, because I hear friends of mine talking about things that they hadn't ever talked about before. Now, on Chasing Justice, me and the guys in the neighborhood, we had talked about the potential for revolution or another civil war, because we saw some things going on. We saw the bitter politics of people not speaking to family members and friends because you voted one way or you voted another. You don't believe what I believe, and therefore you're horrible and you're evil. And we talked about that. And that was kind of background conversation, but nothing serious. Now we are seeing average people who don't really pay attention to these things talking about, geez, when I see everybody in the street ripping down statues and burning and no one's doing anything, this can't go on. Right? As this starts to get closer and closer to places outside of these cities, and you start stopping cars and bashing in the windows of cars with moms and their kids in the car, and then the mom gets panicked and runs people over, right? Or they try to pull somebody out of a car and that person is a concealed carry person, and they light up these people that are trying to bash them with pipes and rocks and bottles and bust up their car. Now, that flashpoint is not just talk, now it's real. And I think regular people who normally don't pay attention are now seeing that on the news every day. And they're starting to get concerned. So I wanted to try and figure out, can a case for war be made? And one of the questions that I pose in the article, and I encourage you to go read it, it's on the AmericaOutloud.com platform, is that, is it this time around, are we people versus the government, which is the normal kind of revolution, the people fight back against the government, or is it people versus people? And the government is kind of on the outside right at the moment. They haven't taken a side, which is one of the other problems. And one of the things I address in the article is that, where is our government to come down on the side of freedom and liberty? Why are they coming down on the side of destruction? Now, I get it. Protest in the street. Everybody get together. Let's all march for what we believe in. That is our right as Americans. And I absolutely support that. Doesn't matter if I agree or don't agree with people or what people are protesting about. They have a right to protest. Do they have a right to block traffic? Do they have a right to bash windows out of cars? Do they have a right to pull down statues because they don't agree with them? The answer there is clearly no. And that's where anarchy and chaos start to creep in. And our government has not taken a strong stance to protect us and our beliefs and our America and the things we want to do. Now, if a community gets together and says, we don't want a statue that's in our park up there anymore, we don't believe in what that person who is pictured in that statue believed in, we want it down. If the people of that community vote for that, then they have a right to take a statue down. But you can't have a mob just go in and decide, we don't want that, and rip it down. Because what about the other people who do want it there? See, we all get to have a say here. But as we go on, and you'll see in the article, is one of the first things that they're going to attack to change all this is free speech. Now, free speech is a cornerstone. It's the linchpin of freedom. Without free speech, all our other rights go away because you cannot stand up for yourself. You cannot speak out. So one of the first things that people want to do when they want to destroy what is existing is stop people's ability to talk about it. So initially, the political correctness that we started to see, political correctness was established specifically to address people's free speech and to shut it down. That was the purpose. So you couldn't say certain things, because if you said them, that meant you're a hater, you're a this, you're a that. So therefore, they wanted to control your speech. Now, that's not how the Constitution was set up. Constitution was set up, you have free speech. You could say whatever you want. Doesn't mean anyone has to listen to you. And a matter of fact, if you say something that people don't like and you are a business, they don't have to buy your products. If you are an individual, they can vote you out of office. People can not be your friend if they don't like the things that you had to say. But in the same vein, that doesn't mean if a business owner says something that people don't like, you can go and burn their store to the ground. You can beat them and then go in and steal everything out of their store. That doesn't mean you can go and attack somebody's home personally where they live because you don't agree with them. Free speech means all speech is allowed. And then we pick and choose and decide amongst that free speech what we believe, want to listen to, or care about. Anything other than that is aimed at silencing you so that you can't speak up for yourself. We are seeing that now at an increased level, a level we have never seen before. And I think I was very, very pleased to be asked to be on the Viewpoint program with Malcolm Out Loud. And he read some quotes out of there. And one of the things, I'm not going to read the quote, but what I was talking about was, you know, back in the day, if you said something people didn't like, you didn't get invited to a party. They didn't, you know, you weren't their friend or you weren't on social media. Now, when you say something people don't like or that the mob doesn't like, they rip your tongue out and they answer by burning things and shooting at you. Now, that is only one step away from total tyranny, because it depends on whose speech is allowed will determine the kind of life you will live and how you will live that life. There are lots of things people say that I don't like, but when I don't like it, if it's on TV, I turn the channel. If it's on a radio, I turn it off. If I'm in the presence of it, I walk away. I don't attack and destroy, because that's not how a civilized society works. So what we see going on in our streets today is the closest thing I think we've come in a really a long time to have that Fort Sumter moment, when the potential flashpoint is very close. When you got people in each other's faces with such terrible hatred and rhetoric and so diametrically opposed to each other's points, and they're standing there, both of them steaming, ready to attack, ready to fight. It's only a matter of time until somebody swings that fist or uses a weapon to attack the other person. And once that flashpoint starts, then we go to a whole different kind of thing. And unfortunately, for the first time in 150 or so years, I think we are very, very close to that. And this time it's citizen versus citizen, and the government is taking a back seat. Our politicians are weak. They're afraid to step forward. They're afraid to make a point because, boy, if they say the wrong thing, they could lose their next election, and then they're out of their job. Well, I think a lot of people are silenced in not political world, are silenced for the same reason. If you say the wrong thing, you could get fired. We see it happen every day. And now we see businesses burned and destroyed as a way to silence people. So, my Chasing Justice family out there, will you be silenced? What is it we should do? Well, we'll talk about that as we go forward. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and this is Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello and welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. Now, we left off there in our first segment talking about my article, A Case for War, and what I see going on in the country and the potential dangers we all face. As a teacher, as a writer, as someone who tries to have a voice to try and make things better, I try and look at things and say, how can I help? What can I do? You know, right now, my brother and sister police officers feel completely abandoned. Now, the danger to all of us when that happens, when they feel abandoned or they feel that if they do any police action, things we have demanded of them, and it's not viewed in the appropriate light, or it's reacted to in a political way, because we see a lot of politicians doing things to appease the crowds so as not to have a city burn, that causes police officers to fall back to the Ferguson effect. Now, that happened in Ferguson, Missouri, when the officer shot the gentle giant for attacking him. And, you know, that's where the whole, you know, hands up, don't shoot thing started. But that was completely proved that that did not happen. But that has not changed the narrative. The narrative still is that that young man was, you know, going off to college, getting ready to go to college, did nothing wrong, didn't rob that store before he was confronted by the officer, and the officer simply wanted to murder him. And that's because that's what cops do. They murder people, especially minority people in our country. That narrative is still alive, even though it's been completely debunked. There are no news articles pointing out how that was debunked, that that didn't happen. There's simply things, well, he was not charged. The officer was not charged. In other words, you know, he should have been, because we all know what really happened there, as opposed to telling the truth. And that's one of the problems we have. We don't get truth. We don't know how to decipher things, because you can only go by the information you got, right? Well, I'm looking at that and I'm saying, if our police back off to protect themselves, first of all, protect themselves from lawsuits is one thing. But when you're now going to protect yourself from being physically injured or killed, that's completely different. Because our officers do not go to work every day to say, well, you know what, if I get killed, that's part of the job. Now, they do say that because there is an understanding that that is potentially part of a law enforcement officer's job. But you don't go there going, you know what, I have to get shot in the head, and if somebody wants to do that, that's part of what I need to be involved with. No, absolutely not. Our cops do not have to get injured. They do not have to get shot to do their job. That is a problem. And when we start to say that people can throw rocks and bottles and Molotov cocktails and they can shoot our officers, beat them, ambush them like they did down in Tampa, call in a fake call to get the cops to come somewhere and then attack the officers, that's open warfare on police officers. And that is the next step in what we're seeing in this this revolution that's taking place. So our officers, smartly in many cases, are backing off. They're saying, you know what, I'll go answer my calls, but I'm not going to be proactive anymore. I'm not going to get myself involved in something that, first of all, I could get fired, I could get sued, I could go to prison, or I could get killed. I'm not doing it. We see officers retiring from lots of departments saying, you know what, time to get out. I have conversations with retired guys and girls all the time, and right now the conversation is, boy, glad I got out when I did, because I wouldn't want to be any part of this. Do you see the inherent danger to all of society when that happens? When our police back off, they are the line that keeps us safe from chaos. So we have to really decide these things. And the last thing I'm going to talk about the article is one of the things I said in there is if we don't make a decision on how we want this to come out, and that can be through elections, through getting involved in ourselves, to getting ourselves together as groups to discuss these things, to try and figure it out, someone else is going to decide for us. And we may not like the decision they make. So how could I do something about this? Well, I've always had a great relationship with every community I worked with. Now, I'm from one particular community. Everybody's from their own community, right? But as a law enforcement officer, I had to learn about other communities. I had to learn how to deal with other people's communities, other people's understanding of the world around them. You know, I've talked about this in the past, and when I teach police officers, I try and tell them right off the bat, if you only see the world one way, the way you are, then you're going to miss out on a lot, because there's other ways of seeing things, and that's what we all need to understand. Everybody needs to see there's other ways to see things. All right, so I look at this and I say, how can I do it? Well, there was a gentleman that I worked with for a long time. He was a lieutenant in the Asbury Park Police Department, which is a bigger town here in New Jersey, and they've had their share over the years of difficulties. So this gentleman is Lieutenant George Corbin, and George is an African-American. He was an excellent police officer. He served his community in every possible way in law enforcement, rose up through the ranks, was a great leader, and is now retired. He worked in the local schools as a resource officer. He did so many things to help his community. He's now very, very involved in the local church life and trying to make things different in his community and all the surrounding communities that are around him. George is a guy who reaches out his hand to help anyone. So George and I got together and we started having a conversation. What is it we can do to maybe help our brother and sister law enforcement officers not feel so abandoned? And at the same time, how can we listen to the communities that we serve and hear what they're upset about? And how can we bring all these groups together? Because a society is not going to work the way it's being laid out right now. What's happening right now, attacking our police, trying to shut down the police department, defund the police department, all this kind of stuff is not going to work. Also, allowing entire communities in our country to feel that they're not properly served by the police, that they are attacked by the police, that's not going to work either. We have to change those paradigms. Right? No matter how much truth is on either side of those things, we have to come to a reality understanding of this, and we have to deal with it. And if we're waiting for our politicians to do it, it could be a very, very long time, because they're only going to do what's expedient for them. And right now, it's expedient for them to root on the mobs, because the mobs have power. They're out in the street, and the political correctness of the media says you better be on the side of the mob, or you're bad. And if you're bad, you're going to get voted out of your job. So the politicians who really sway with the wind, because that's the nature of politics, not a good politician. I would think a good politician would be strong and stand up for what's truth and what's justice and what's right. And if you lose your job, well, then so be it. At least you did the right thing. Most of our politicians are not that. Most of them get into the game and realize there's a lot of personal gain from being in politics, and therefore they don't want to give it up. So George and I, we're sitting down and we're saying, okay, what is it we can do? What is the essence of what's going on right now? And, you know, because I write a lot of things, I try and find key phrases or words that are descriptive so that I can then flesh out an idea. And I said, George, I think we need to come up with a program that helps our cops, helps our communities, and brings us all together. And I think we need to call it This Moment in Time. Now, when I thought about that, what does that mean, this moment in time? Well, it's the open door to everything we need to do. At this moment in time, we need to understand the value of our police officers and what they bring to our society. At this moment in time, we need to recognize that there are a lot of communities that do not feel properly served by the police. At this moment in time, we have to recognize that there's danger out there, that we could lose all of this. At this moment in time, we have to recognize that we have to find a way to get together to try and understand each other and really have a conversation, as opposed to what goes on right now. Right now, when people say, we need to have a conversation about this, what they mean is, you need to agree with me or we can't talk. Now, that's political correctness, right? Political correctness is run amok. And the purpose is, like I said earlier, to shut down conversation so that people can do what they want to do without people being able to speak up. So George and I are working on this now. We are trying to figure out a way to help all of our communities. And I think some of the symbolism of this that's not lost on George and I is that me as a white American and him as a black American, but together, the two of us as blue officers, we're trying to do the right thing, right? Once again, law enforcement is there for good. That is its purpose, even though there's bad apples. So George and I are trying to make a difference. We're trying to do something. So in the weeks ahead, I'll probably have an article or two about this moment in time. I'll probably talk about it more here on Chasing Justice, but I wanted you to know about it because we all need to start thinking about this moment in time and how do we make this better? Because somebody has to. Cooler heads have to prevail now, right? If not, we're all going to be angry and upset and afraid and anxious. And that is how people get hurt. That is how violence takes off, when people feel trapped in those kind of environments. So I just want to mention that to you. You know, George Corbin, really a great guy. His son just graduated from Temple University. I've always loved George, just really a great guy and an excellent cop too. So look for that in the future as we go forward. Now, I saw something the other day. I saw, you know, one of these anonymous sources as we're talking about the election. And we see Joe Biden is up by 12 points. Can you imagine that? He's up by 12 points. Can you tell me one election in the last 20 cycles of presidential elections where the Democrat was not up by 10 or 15 points 6 or 7 months out? I think Hillary was way up, right? I think Mondale was up. I think Mike Dukakis was way, he was up 17 points over George Bush the senior before the election took place. We know how that came out. So that is a tool the media uses. They have biased polls. They only, you know, polled 20% of Republicans and 60% of Democrats. And they don't use likely voters. They use registered voters to get the answers that they want. All psychological, to make you feel like Trump doesn't have a chance. Matter of fact, that's the conversation now, that Trump already lost. It's over. It's over. We finally got him. It's over. He's out. He's not going to do it. So I just saw this this article by a GOP, a Republican insider who wanted to remain anonymous, that says they know for a fact that unless Trump starts to see those poll numbers turn around, he could just walk away from the presidency. His ego is so big that he could just say, well, if I'm not going to win, I'm not even going to do it. I'll step away. I don't need this. Now, do you think that's true? Do you think President Trump could just turn and walk away if he thinks he's not going to win? I don't know. Let's look at this as from the human standpoint. First of all, the guy ran for president, was beat up the whole time. A coup d'etat was attempted on him, and he fought it back. Right? The truth of the matter, whether somebody gets indicted or charged with the crimes they committed against us, against you and me, all of us, Democrat and Republican, by that coup d'etat attempt, that may be coming out from Attorney General Barr. But the reality is, Trump's been beat up for these entire 3 years, mercilessly, nonstop, every single day. And now they want to attack him again as we're going into this election. Would you want to keep going? Would you want to keep on going? Or would you have some feeling to say, you know what, maybe I just want to step away from this. You know what, I did my part. I did what I could. I created a roaring economy. I made the country stronger, helped our military. I started putting up the border wall. And, you know, I just had enough. Could you see him walking away? And I had to think about that. I said, could I see that happening? Now, would I say it's because his ego? Well, people who don't like him would say his ego would cause him to do that. I am open to the idea that a person's ego might not want them to lose. But I don't know from what I've seen from this president that he would actually just go, you know what, I'm not going to win with the fake news and the fake media, and I've had enough, I'm out of here. I can't imagine he would do that. I think he would ride this through either way. What I do think is if he did lose, he would be disappointed, but I don't think he'd be that disappointed, which there's another danger for all of us. Who is going to step up to look out for us the way President Trump has? Now, you might not like him. You might not like the things he says. You might not like the way he treats people. But what has he done as a president to try and preserve freedom and liberty and justice in our country and to help us all have an economy that serves everyone? Who else is going to do that? We know if Joe Biden wins, first of all, I don't know that he's capable of doing the job. He seems very frail to me. He seems to be having obvious mental problems, you know, probably brought on by age. So whoever he picks for vice president is probably who's going to be running the deal. But that's a story for another episode. But, you know, is Joe Biden, is he, him and the Democrats and their policies, are they going to continue a roaring economy? Or is the economy going to be less, right? What are they going to do with this pandemic? Is this an opportunity to keep us all in? Is this an opportunity to create a great need for government that, you know, they thrive on? you know, in certain parties? I don't know. But I don't know that President Trump is just going to walk away. And these polls, I don't think you can believe in polls until very close to the election, because people that run polls, their bread and butter, I would think, would be having accurate polls. So right now, they're just having polls. They're making news stories. They're using polls to make news stories, to make controversy. As it gets closer and closer, I'm going to think that they're going to want to have accurate polls, which will reflect more truthfully. Like I said, Mike Dukakis was up by 17 points, I believe, at this point against George Bush the Elder. And we know how that came out. So we're going to see where that's going to go. We see that the Biden campaign has agreed to three debates with Trump. And we also see that Joe Biden hasn't come out of his basement in months. And when he did most recently, he showed up in a backyard gathering of, I think, four people or five people. And he said that there are 120 million people have died from COVID. One third of our population has died from COVID. Well, we know that that's all incorrect. Where were the myriad of stories questioning his mental acumen, his ability to remember facts, when he gaffes all the time and he seems very confused, he can't remember things? Trump walked down a ramp with slippery shoes, and immediately he had Parkinson's, he had 17 other health issues, we better pull him into the hospital, see what's wrong with him. When he simply had slippery shoes going down a ramp, which I've walked down without a handle, sometimes you got to be careful in business shoes. Where is the obvious problems Joe Biden has, and where are the story after story? Where's the demand for him to get out of that basement and answer some questions? What does he think about the riots in the streets? What does he think about going forward we should do? How come those questions are not asked of him? Why is that? We have to ask ourselves that question. And obviously, it's because the bias is so obvious in our modern country that you can't get around it. I think it's very sad that Joe Biden's family has him out there making a fool of himself and looking feeble for a man who, you know, whether you like what he did as a politician across his career, he served his country for a long time, good, bad, or indifferent. And at the end of his career, they're going to let this happen. Now, if the public has determined that they would rather go socialist, if the public has determined that they would rather Joe Biden and the Democrats running the country and our military and our borders and our taxes and everything else, then that's what they're going to get, because you get the government you deserve. And if people go out and vote for Joe Biden and the Democrats, that's the way it's going to go. And we all have to think about that, you know, because what's next? Is it going to get better when they take over? I don't know. We'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice to talk some more about this.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Okay, so what else is going on out there in the world? You know, we got the pandemic, and it is still raging in some parts of the country. I mean, down in Florida, which opened really early, and Texas, which opened really early, they're having lots and lots of cases. So initially, you could see everyone screaming, see, states that opened up, there people are sick, and we shouldn't open, we should have been locked down tighter, we should stay locked down. Well, there's always more to the story. You know, what does the headline serve is the way you have to look at the news. What does that serve? That serves the narrative that we should all be locked down, and which fits the Joe Biden doesn't have to go out and talk to anyone, and we can't have gatherings, we can't have Trump rallies, and we can't vote, we have to vote by mail. All that is what that serves. When we look deeper in the numbers, and I'm not a doctor, but I've just been reading some different articles from different sources, and it seems that the death rate is still going down in those states where the numbers are going up. And the answer is, you do have a lot of people out and about. No doubt about it. You have the flu, and people are out and about. People are going to catch it. Well, people are out and about with coronavirus, and young people are getting it. But from what I understand, the death rate is going down, even though it's higher in Florida and Texas than it is currently now in New Jersey and New York, which is very low. There are more people dying, but it's not in the same numbers as we had in the Northeast. So could it be that, yes, more people are getting it, and they're younger people, so they're healthier, and it doesn't kill them like it does our older population, who were the victims, I think almost half of them is the statistic of people who died in nursing homes and elderly care facilities, right? Still bad, horrible. These people shouldn't have died, but they did. But does that mean all of us are going to die? Do we stay locked down? Do we stay shut down? Do we vote by mail? Well, just recently, there was a situation in New Jersey where some people have been indicted for voter fraud. Now, we have these arguments. You know, you go on social media and you post something about the potential for mail-in votes being voter fraud. And I got to tell you, some of the vehement responses I've gotten from people that I know. You got to understand, I don't want to get sick and die. I'd rather send in my vote by mail. And there's no fraud. That's a lie. There's no fraud. Well, I'm not going to say that it's huge, but if you give an opportunity, this is not absentee ballot. Absentee ballot, you have to prove who you are, and then you get your ballot. At least there's a little check and balance on there. When they're just going to mail ballots that they have your address, and they know there's 9 people there that are of age, so they send you 9 ballots. You don't know who's living there now. You don't know who's moved, who's in another state. But I have 9 ballots I could fill out. I just send them in. Is somebody going to go check 150 million ballots to make sure they were all good, they were eligible? I don't think they are. I think it opens us up to fraud. So let's just say there's a close election and everybody believes that there was some fraud. Is that going to make the transition go well? We just had a transition that was horrible, that was marked by a coup d'etat, but marked by the hanging on to power by those who demanded Trump admit that he would immediately step away if he lost the election, right? Remember all that? So what is our future here with this mail-in ballots? Now, I understand people are scared to death. Around here, we are respectful of the potential damage that the coronavirus can do, COVID-19, what it can do to people. We are respectful of it because it's real. It's not a fake virus. It's a real virus. And we have older people in our family that we don't want to get sick and die. So we're respectful of it, but we're not scared to death of it. You know, we're wearing a mask where we're told it's appropriate to wear a mask. We social distance as the appropriate thing to do. As long as this thing is around, we should all try and do the right things, right? Isn't that the idea? Try and do the right thing. But I see so many people that are still not just concerned about the virus, but are paralyzed with fear, that they really still can't function. And we're calling that, we have the pandemic of the flu. We're calling this the panic-demic that people are still living under. You know, we call them, what Kathleen said to me the other day, my wife, do you ever see the jump back people? You ever go in the store and they do the jump back? Like you're walking up to them, you both have masks on, and they see you, and they recoil in horror. They back up, they jump back because we got too close. You know, we got masks on. We're in a store. There's 4,000 of us in here. You don't think that virus is flowing around in there if it's in there? Calm down, that jump back, you know, jump back. Oh, my God. We talked to somebody else who was hiking in the woods, and they came across other people, and they ran into the woods off the trail to avoid the other people. Now, I'm trying to be respectful of their fear. I don't have that fear. And you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong to not have that scared to death, paralyzed, can't function fear. But I don't think so. I don't think that's the way to go with this. I think you got to protect yourself, do what's right for society, social distance, all that kind of stuff. But I do think we have to allow businesses to function. And if people are scared and they don't want to come out, they should be able to stay home. Stay home, live on their savings, live on whatever they can get from government that's going to hand them out stuff. But don't force the rest of us into that are willing to do more than simply be panicked. And like I said, I respect the virus. It's a real thing. If I got it, I could get sick. But I'm not willing to crawl in a hole and die and let the world come apart. So that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about, the panic-demic, because I know other people have that too. So how many people were shot and killed in Chicago this past weekend? This is one of the greatest American tragedies going on in our country. Now, there's lots of big cities where people are shot and killed all the time. But Chicago has 100 people a week shot and 14 or 15 killed every single week, including children. Most recently, I think a three-month-old got hit with a bullet, a stray bullet from one of these gunfights. A teenage girl was killed. Their lives wiped out for nothing. Where is the law enforcement there? Why are they not going after this? Can anybody... Well, first of all, there actually is no conversation about it. You can bring it up, and it doesn't go any further. Where are the news stories about this unbelievable epidemic of shooting and killing in Chicago? Where are the reporters? Where are the news crews flying there trying to find out what's going on? You don't see it. And you have to say why, because it doesn't serve a purpose. I answer my own question. It doesn't serve a purpose that they're looking for, which points out their bias and their corruption, which is very, very sad. You know why? Because there are hundreds of people getting shot every weekend in Chicago and lots of people dying. And they're all American citizens, and they shouldn't be shot, and they shouldn't be dying. We should be in there trying to help them, protect them, right, from the people who want to do the shooting. They have some of the strictest gun laws in America, and still people get hurt. Why? Because nobody's willing to go in and enforce the law, because it's not going to look good when you enforce the law. Enforcing the law is not getting cats out of trees. When you're dealing with people that are shooting, you're dealing with weapons and you're dealing with murder, it can get really, really ugly. And I'm sure the cops really want nothing to do with it, because if you get involved with that kind of crime fighting, you have to arrest people. They probably don't want to be arrested, and they're going to fight back. And then don't you fight back, cop, because if you do, we got you on tape. You're a hater and we're going to put you in prison, right? So how are we going to solve that problem in Chicago? How do we as Americans sit back and watch this go on every single weekend, and we do nothing? We've abandoned the good, decent people of Chicago to the criminal element. You know, I don't understand that at all. I find that very difficult to deal with in my own head, especially as a law enforcement kind of guy. So we saw the Supreme Court make a couple of decisions recently. One went for Trump, and some others went against him. And it's kind of interesting because everyone was so afraid of the Supreme Court. They were going to be so conservative. They were going to do everything conservative. And actually, it turns out they're not doing all that much conservative. But I did find funny a poll on the justices. And I don't have the exact numbers, so forgive me if you have the exact numbers. But it was like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh had 33% approval, while Ruth Bader Ginsburg has 46% approval. Right, she's looked at as a great justice, a tremendous person, which I find interesting. I think Alito and a bunch of the others had 27%. And the article, the way it was framed, unless I read it wrong, was that these two new great heroes of the right that were appointed by President Trump have only 33%. Well, they had more than the other justices who had 27. So that was kind of ridiculous. The other thing I want to talk about with this political correctness, this is actually pretty good. I'm going to go over a list here. There's a list that I saw, and I found it extremely interesting. And I wanted to talk to you about it quickly. There's a whole list of things. Somebody put in a, I guess it was a post on social media. And I will read the things to you, and then we'll kind of go over them. All of America now knows that what's been painfully clear to the rest of America is that Trump is a corrupt fraud, right? That's what they say. And then here's what it says. Hillary isn't going to prison. There is no Obamagate. There is no border wall. There is no migrant terrorist caravan. Beautiful health care didn't arrive. North Korea still has nuclear weapons. the tax cut was for the rich. And the coronavirus didn't go down to zero. So all of that, those statements, very, very declarative statements, it shows that Trump has done nothing. His accomplishments are not real. They're fake, and you're all believing them. I saw an article a couple weeks ago about if you voted for Trump or you're considering voting for him in the future, there's no doubt about it. You are a racist. You are a xenophobe. You are a homophobe. You are a terrorist. You are a white supremacist. All this, guaranteed, these are the things you are if you vote for Trump. Now, I can tell you, I'm none of those things, and I'm still considering it. Voting for President Trump, because my alternative is what? Socialism and Joe Biden? I don't know. So I'm trying to figure out in my head what's best for me and for my family. But when I go over that list, Hillary isn't going to prison. Well, we know she was a big part of the coup d'etat. She paid a foreign national with former intelligence ties to get Russian information to use against President Trump. I think there's some laws against that. I think Director Comey came out with a long list of violations she committed, but then because the fix was in, they said no one's going to prosecute her. So Hillary isn't going to prison, not because she didn't commit crimes, but because there's no political will to go after her. And I think that's probably because she does know a lot, and she probably would spill her guts if she got arrested, and she would give up stuff on a lot of them on both sides of the aisle. There is no Obamagate. Well, we know right now, we see General Flynn is caught up in a whole mess because the whole thing was faked up to go after him, which was one of the things they had to do first was to get rid of General Flynn so he couldn't uncover everything in his position. So General Flynn is part of Obamagate. We know there were improper FISA warrants filed. We know that the dossier was fake and they knew it. We know that the Mueller investigation knew immediately that there was no Russian collusion, but that went on for 2.5 years. And there was an impeachment that we know was faked. We know that people set up fake faxes and fake emails to themselves before they left the White House as a cover-up. We now know that Joe Biden himself was probably the one who suggested that they used the Logan Act against General Flynn, right? So I find that one funny, that there is no Obamagate. Well, we're going to find out soon enough if there was or wasn't, but the evidence seems pretty clear. Right? There is no border wall. I just saw the president down the other day on the 500th mile of the border wall, signing it, you know, putting his name on it, which is pretty good. I wish it was 2,000 miles, but there is a border wall. It's just going slow. And why was it going slow? Because our friends on the left refused to support it. See, all the things the president wants to do, he can't do without support. He can't just wave a wand and say, now we're going to do this. We have a country, we have a republic, where we have representatives, checks and balances. We don't have a tyrant, as much as you want to say that he is. We don't have a tyrant, so he has to go by what the Congress is willing to help him with. No migrant terrorist caravan. Now, remember all the caravans were coming up? They were coming up because they were allowed to come up. When the president took action that wasn't going to allow them to come up, they stopped coming up. Now, if you are naive enough to believe that terrorists who want to get in our country, they're going to fly into the airport now and take a chance on being caught, or they could fly to Mexico and then come up with a caravan. What do you think would happen there? Just logistically, put yourself in that position. What would you do? This seems pretty obvious. Beautiful health care didn't arrive. Well, who blocked everything the president wanted to do? Want to get rid of Obamacare, which is not good for everyone. Just because you're covered doesn't mean you actually have insurance, right? We know that. It's so expensive. So that didn't happen. North Korea still has nuclear weapons. Yes, they do. But have they been launching them at Japan? No, we at least got them in a dialogue that had never happened before. So our alternative is to blow up their missiles and start World War III or continue to talk. And no one has done that previously. So that one went right out the window. The tax cut was for the rich. Well, a lot of companies and higher-end people did get tax cuts, and what did they do with that? They returned it to their businesses, they hired, and we saw the biggest economic boom in our country's history, which did, I know everybody hates these words, trickled on down to everybody else. I know there was more work for everyone. We know that our minority communities all had work. We know that the economy was roaring, people were making money, they were back to work, they were off of social programs. All good things. And you know what? The old saying that a poor guy never gave you a job is true. So if the wealthier people, the bigger companies, don't make money, they don't have money to spend on employees and improving their companies and offering new things and jobs for lots and lots of people. So I find that to be foolish also. And the coronavirus didn't go down to zero. Well, if the president said it was going to go down to zero, if President Trump said that, then I'm going to tell you he was wrong to say that. Because a virus is not something you can totally wipe out. It can be beaten back by a vaccine to help us get an immunity to it so it doesn't affect us. But the fact that I don't believe I ever heard him say it's going to go down to zero. If I'm wrong and he did say that, well, then he was wrong. Because you know what? A virus don't go down to zero. But that's just, I found that list hysterical. Absolutely hysterical. It's as though these things are absolute truth because somebody put them down and said it. And it just shows you what a corrupt person he is because all of this is lies. Well, there's my point is that there's an answer to every one of those kind of nonsense things that these people put out when they say things like that. So what do you say about that list? What do you think about it? Well, we covered a lot here today, my friends. I really enjoy being here every day, and I want to, you know, thank Malcolm Out Loud and the entire AmericaOutLoud.com family for having me on here, give me an opportunity to speak. Take a look at my column, A Case for War, and I will be presenting new articles and columns coming up soon. I would like to thank Lieutenant George Corbin for helping me be together, to work together with me to try and solve some of our problems. Someone has to do it, right? So this moment in time, look for that coming your way. And in the meantime, pay close attention to what's going on. Think about what's best for your family. Think about the alternatives that are being offered to you and how you're going to do the things that are going to be asked of you as we go forward. And remember, always be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro saying see you next time on AmericaOutLoud.com here on the Chasing Justice Show.